Welcome to Threads of Sustainability, where you get to hear the passionate, informative, and engaging conversations of creatives, makers, manufacturers, and producers from all over the globe. We explore what sustainability can look like in the quilting, fiber, and textile world, and I'm your host, Bridget O'Flaherty, also known as the Sustainable Quilter. Welcome to another episode of Threads of Sustainability. I'm your host, Bridget O'Flaherty. And this week, I've got another interesting episode, of course, always wanting to bring an interesting episode. This week, I'm talking with a zero-waste clothing designer, which I don't normally go into the clothing side of things because there's a lot of people out there doing really amazing podcasts around sustainable clothing and sustainable sewing, but this one was kind of interesting for me just because it really kind of gets into the material content. And we get to have this really interesting conversation around the decisions he's been making with his company and how they are approaching zero waste and what that can look like, as well as trying to do safe and healthy materials as well in this world of textiles and fashion, which is really complicated. Anyway, it was a super interesting conversation. He comes at it from a perspective of not being a sewist and being more of a business person, but he's also a lot younger. So just kind of cool to have this perspective and bring it to the conversation for sourcing materials. Anyway, I really hope you enjoy this conversation that I have with Christian and his company about his company, Slow. Here you go. Enjoy. Welcome to Threads of Sustainability, Christian. It's nice to connect with you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I've got Christian Hansen here, and we ended up connecting. I can't exactly remember how we connected. I think it was through somebody who was helping you with kind of promoting your podcast, or no, not promoting your business, wanting them here on my podcast. And I was actually really excited because you've done some really interesting stuff around slow fashion, but you've had this really cool journey to get there. So I wanted to talk to you about it. Is that right?
That's getting that right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That would be Steve. Shout out to Steve, my podcast agent with Kid Caster, who are phenomenal. And they are the ones that have been reaching out to great podcast hosts like yourself and getting me on them.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about, let's start with the beginning of the journey for you. And because you have not always been in fashion, that's not been your world until sort of recent years. So tell us a little bit about how you got here.
Sure. I mean, I started out as a hockey player. That's really all I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I played hockey. I left home at like 16 years old to go and play hockey in boarding school and then junior hockey, and then basically climbed the ranks until my body couldn't do it anymore. And kind of accidentally stumbled into the fashion industry, post sports. And there was an opening, and it was basically with a big fast fashion company, and they needed someone who could, basically be charismatic, go into a room and, try and help make things happen. And you didn't need any fashion experience. And I thought, you know what, let's do it. I need something. Let's rebound. And so I kind of stumbled into the industry by accident. And it was that job with that company that made me realize that this industry has a lot of problems and a lot of skeletons and a lot of closets. And it's what ultimately inspired me to move in the direction of sustainable fashion.
So before we jump into that part, which is absolutely where I want to go, but what were some of the kind of the things that you were starting to see in that fast fashion world that made you pause and wonder, I don't know if this is really what I want to do? Like, what were you starting to see?
The first thing was that they basically don't care if they have waste products. And that was a really huge shock to me, showing up and going to negotiate a deal for 100,000, 200,000 pieces of jeans or whatever it was. And basically coming back and being like, great, okay, this is happening by this date, et cetera, et cetera. And them having, no intention to actually sell through that stock. They had targets, but 60% was
so it wasn't waste in the production. It was overbuying.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we
Oh.
would throw away hundreds of thousands of pairs of denim, like jeans, in bags that should be in a store, and they would just there's millions of pairs of jeans that are sitting in boxes around the world that they're either going to end up being tossed in a landfill or incinerated.
Wow.
And that for me was this thing where it's like I'm standing in a warehouse full of things that are perfectly good, and there are people around the world that don't even have great clothing on their backs, but rather than donate this or try and upcycle it into anything, it's cheaper for you to just get rid of it and make something new.
Or how about
And
like ordering only what you need? How
you
about
that's the
that?
thing, right?
Yeah.
They have no idea, and their margins are so good because they're paying absolutely nothing to have these things manufactured.
And
And so
what kind of regions were you seeing this? Like I don't I, we're not going to name names of companies and that kind of thing
sure.
here, but what regions were you seeing this kind of production? Where were you?
I mean, it happens in pretty much all of the major textile countries, which are basically Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, Turkey, where I am right now. Various countries are better than others. You have, China, for example, that produces massive amounts of clothing, and in some cases with forced labor in prisons. And so the scale of fashion is huge. There are factories that they produce a couple of million units a month. That's their
Wow.
target, 2 or 3 million pairs of jeans or chinos or whatever they make per month.
Wow.
And these are factories, they call them super factories or mega factories in Bangladesh with 35, 40,000 people working in them.
Wow.
And these are spaces that should maybe only have 10,000 people in them. You can't even walk through them. I never actually ended up going to see any of them because they don't want people like me poking around. And
Right.
that was, a bigger part of the problem was that I wanted to look around corners and no one wanted me to look around corners. They would
Of
say, we have
course.
auditors for that. We get this factory audited. We get that factory audited. They pass the audit. But then I would finally get to go to these places and be like, how did this pass the audit? This is
Right.
ridiculous.
Right. And so how did they pass the audit?
It's kind of a rigged system in a lot of ways. Now, not every audit company, I don't want to call them all out, but a lot of them is kind of rigged. They say on January 17th, you're going to have your audit. And so on January 17th, everything is perfect. A third of the staff
Right.
is
Okay.
there.
So it's not that
Everyone is.
they're not falsifying what they see, but the production has had the opportunity to clean up for the moment.
Absolutely. And they know when these
Okay,
guys are
okay.
coming and they know when they're coming to inspect. And
Right.
there are very few ways to fail these audits. And again,
Right.
some of the companies are phenomenal, and that's why not a lot of factories have particular audits. There's some very, very harsh Scandinavian companies that will come in and absolutely tear you to shreds, down to you have a loose screw on one of your sewing machines. It's unbelievable how in depth that they'll go. But for the average fast fashion factory, they work on a grading system, and you'll see A, B, C, D, et cetera, down to F. And their standards for most of these companies are like D or higher. And so they're basically
Okay,
like,
so
oh, yeah,
you
they
can
missed
still have
a
a
couple of
D, but
things.
it still passes.
Absolutely.
Okay,
Absolutely. And I've
okay.
been in A factories that I'm looking around going, this is a hellhole. Why are you making
Right,
things here? And
right.
so that was really what got me towards, I don't feel good on these trips, and I don't
Right.
feel good going home knowing these things and seeing these things in stores. And that was really the kind of tipping point for me.
So you were seeing all of this stuff, not feeling good about the work that you were doing, and you decided you had like, how did you decide, okay, I'm going to leave this job, which is where I'm making my money right now, because I want to do different things, to becoming a company where you're actually making things? How did you go
Yeah.
from there to there?
Yeah, it's I've kind of always been entrepreneurial, ever since I was a kid. I was always kind of fascinated with the idea of selling things and building businesses, and that was always something that I knew that I wanted to do. I'm a horrible employee for the most part. I always just I
A lot of
ask too many
entrepreneurs are,
questions.
right?
Yeah, I ask too many questions and I don't like standard operating procedures and I like to do things differently. And so I kind of knew that naturally at some point I would be trying to do something myself. And that's just kind of the tipping point where I started to know enough people in the industry that knew ways to do it the right way. And so I basically made some phone calls and was like, where do I make things if I want to make them right? And my first company, we were making things in Portugal out of really great little factories,
So
basically.
what things? What did you start with making?
Started with a line of basics, just basically t-shirts, like underwear, shorts, et cetera. Just kind of basic stuff, all made out of organic and recycled polyesters and everything that, we could find. That was kind of the newest innovations, but 4 or 5 years ago, taking tires and turning it into
So
polyester
just
and
looking
things
for
like that.
interesting innovations.
Yeah, and that was kind of my shtick per se. It was like,
Okay.
let's take something cool that mostly only the big brands are, either ignoring or using, or kind of luxury brands are using, and are kind of away from a price point that the average consumer would look at, and see if we can make it work for, the average consumer's, ideal price point. And so, we were making t-shirts that competitors were selling at like $120 and trying to sell them at 35.
Right.
And, basically trying to bridge a gap between that kind of sustainable fashion, which has been a thing for 25, 30 years. But to me, it doesn't count if it's not accessible. There's no such
Right.
thing as sustainable fashion if it's not accessible by the people who actually want to champion it.
Right.
And
It just becomes an elite product that only the privileged can actually purchase. It's a luxury item rather than normal.
exactly. And sustainability to me is not a luxury. It should be the standard.
Yeah,
And so that was something
agreed.
that was really confusing, was like, why is a sustainable t-shirt $150? At the time, I was a university student, essentially. And I was like, I don't have $150 to spend on a t-shirt, but I also really care about the environment. And,
Right.
I always laugh because you'll see these climate protests and, you'll see people that print thousands of t-shirts on, Gildan 2000s that are made by children in Bangladesh. And, they'll have
Right.
climate strike on the back. And it's like, I've seen what comes out of those factories. It doesn't work like that. And so I got thinking about it, like, no, we need basic t-shirts that can be printed that are sustainable. And we need basic supplies that are accessible to people who don't have $150, and that's okay. And so
Yeah.
that was kind of the first step into the world of fashion.
Okay. And so how did you then hone in on, so tell us what you're doing right now. Like what is
Sure.
it that you're doing now? 'Cause I think it's super cool, but we haven't even really talked about that. What's your business now?
Sure. I'm working on a project called Slow, the antithesis of fast fashion. And right now, our main focus is denim. What we essentially do is we are a made-to-order denim company. Denim is one of the biggest polluters in fashion, between, waste products and just the fact that it is a very challenging thing to manufacture sustainably. So there's not a lot of it. So what we do basically is, we're entirely made to order. We only make what is ordered. You come to me and you tell me I want this cut in this fabric, and I am this size. We have the largest size set of any brand on earth, I believe, still to this day.
Okay.
And we're only working on making more. And so the goal right now is to create an affordable, inclusive, and sustainable made-to-order jean that lasts you a lifetime. And so we're trying to take a step back from fast fashion, which is all about mass standardization and how do we fit as many people into a small size set as possible, and go back to the way that we used to make clothes, about 100 years ago, where you would go to a tailor or a seamstress, or you would make it yourself to
Right.
your body, fit to your preferences, and really create lifetime pieces.
Hey everyone, it's Bridget, the sustainable quilter. I wanted to let you know about the Green Stitchers Hive. It's our brand new online community. It's a welcoming space where we can connect, share knowledge and resources, and support each other in our journey towards sustainable textile practices, whatever that means to you, quilting, weaving, knitting, felting, anything. Inside the Hive, we have workshops, monthly challenges, live Q&A sessions, live lectures with guest speakers, and opportunities to connect with other like-minded people. You can access the Green Stitchers Hive on my website at bridgetoflaherty.com. Can't wait to see you there. So people can go on to the, I got to wrap my head around, how do you know what fits you? How do you find the fit that you want if you're not trying jeans on? How do you do
Yeah,
that?
We basically use 3D sizing technology. So everyone has a smartphone now, and just about everyone's smartphone has a LiDAR scanner, which basically can measure the light in a room and distances with insane accuracy. Even 5 years ago, we didn't even have technology like that. And so you can take your smartphone, and in about 60 seconds, I can take a scan of your body, and I can create a 3D model of you and take your measurements out of that and match you to a
Wow.
size in our size set. And
That's
so
awesome. It's a
that
little freaky
system,
too, but it's awesome.
Exactly. It is, if you don't want to do that, you can also just send me your measurements.
Okay.
I only need four of them. And you can do them just kind of the old school way. Just take a tailor's tape and just,
Yeah.
I basically need your waist, your high hip, your low hip, your thigh, and your inseam. And then from there, we've created basically a bunch of algorithms that take those ratios, your hip to waist ratio, your waist to inseam ratio, and basically fits a pair of jeans for you. And so what we do is we have a size set of about 200 sizes right now, and we match you as closely as possible to one of those sizes, and we get within about 1% of all measurements.
That's amazing. And what about the styles? Like, how do you select styles for folks?
So we've got flat, like five core cuts right now, your standard skinny jeans, straight jeans, your boot cuts. And so you tell us which one you're interested in. We size you and we put you into one of those cuts. Right now, that's where the experience ends. But we're actually the main reason I'm in Turkey right now is I'm building my own manufacturing facility where we're going to
Oh.
add about seven more layers of customization. And so you'll be able to choose your fabric, whether you want stretch denim or non-stretch denim, where you want your fabric to come
Okay,
from,
so
whether
you just said something there that makes me really curious. So how are you incorporating stretch denim that's got a sustainable lens to it?
Sure. So basically, right now, there's been a lot of innovation in the last few years with recycled polyesters and recycled lycras. There's a really fantastic binding agent called T400, which comes from the Lycra company, and it's basically comes from recycled tires and
Okay.
post-consumer plastic. That's what makes up the majority of the fabrics that we're using.
Okay.
You can also get stretch fabric that doesn't have elastane and other things in it. They can use viscose, which naturally has some stretch. They can use various weaving techniques, even with 100% cotton, to give it stretch. So that's really right now the core of what we're doing. We're using a great mill here in Turkey called ISKO. And I highly encourage anyone to look at their website, ISKO. They're like the leading denim sustainability mill in the world.
That's cool. Like I struggle a little bit still with the idea of the recycled content. I love that it's being used to create new materials, but then there's still plastics in there that when the jeans are no longer functional for a person, can't easily be recycled again because they're now interwoven into materials.
Yes and no. I mean, we haven't actually been around long enough to run into this problem yet, but we are
Right.
working for on a circular system where essentially you can send us your old jeans back. For
Okay.
example, in Turkey, what they do with a lot of basically post-consumer denim is they grind it up and they turn it into insulation for homes. They use it in a variety of different applications, and
And are
they
they able
actually,
to use the stuff that has stretch in it?
they actually prefer it.
Oh.
Because it's easier to melt, and when they melt things together, the
Oh, then
plastic
it
ends up.
holds, it's a binder. Oh,
Exactly.
okay.
So they
Interesting.
buy trimmings. So for example, when we cut a pair out from just a pattern, we have naturally lots of trimmings. There are companies here in Turkey that they buy all of it. They have a price per pound that they buy all of this waste, whether it's just raw denim that's being just been cut, or whether it's been worn for 5 years. They want
Okay.
it and they use it and they have applications for it.
Okay. And are you trying to develop your patterns to be close to no waste patterns as well? Are you trying to reduce that amount of waste in the first place?
We have to because we have so many of them. I mean, if we
Right.
didn't, it would cost us an absolute fortune and just, wastage. What we're basically working with is automatic cutting machines via laser. And
Okay.
so the application essentially takes our pattern files and puts them to, mathematically, the closest positions and the best positions, like a big puzzle that we
Right,
possibly can
right.
to create the best possible outcome.
Super cool. And so How do you decide, how do you source the core materials, like the cottons that you're using and those elastanes? Like how do you like what's your hierarchy of sustainable things that you want to be bringing into the your products?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to really trusting the mills that you work with, because you physically are not able in some cases to track it all the way down to say like the cotton or the seed going into the ground. It's nearly impossible in terms of traceability to really know. So you have to find mills that you trust and you know that they're auditing their cotton sources correctly and that they're making that information available to you and that you know that that cotton is being, audited and certified by various different cotton boards. Some of them again are kind of like the audits in factories where it's like that's so basic, of course it's certified. But there are some that are very, very strict on where the cotton is coming from, how it's being processed, how it's being turned into yarn, and then basically everything that happens after that. So we have various different mills that we work with here in Turkey and in Italy. They give us all of that information for traceability. They show us all of the different qualities and basically let us sample them. So, for
Okay.
example, I just picked up about 10 fabrics the other day from ISCO. I'm now having samples made and we'll see how it performs. But that's pretty much the supply chain right now.
And are you trying to make sure that you're targeting things like Okotex and GOTS for your certifications, or are they less prominent in terms of the recognizable labeling and certifications of them?
I would say those are two of the better ones. We do definitely look for them. Really, the dirtiest part of denim isn't actually really in the cotton. It comes later in the chemical stages, which is
Okay.
where we put a lot more of our emphasis. So GOTS is excellent, and all of our denim has GOTS. Okotex is a little bit more challenging with denim, but some people do have it. I don't think the particular ones we're working with right now are, but the big ones that we're concerned with are when it comes to the milling process and when you're using indigo and what are you mixing your indigo with, and
Yeah.
basically how are you turning that cotton into denim. And that process can be incredibly destructive and creates just absolutely horrendous, gray waters. And what are you doing with that? And how
Yeah.
is it reworking? And so that's really where our main focus is, because that water, if it's not treated correctly, is just poison for the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the chemicals either leave on the materials or in the water, right? That's pretty
Exactly.
much how it happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, in denim, we have an extra step, right? We have the wash because everyone wants jeans to look old and vintage. So, unlike when you make like a pair of chinos or something, whatever you sew together, that's what ends up in the customer. We sew it together and then we have to bring it to another laundry facility where we
Okay.
have to wash it in washing machines to give it that brushed effect or that old vintage effect. Everyone does it. And so, for years, people did what was called stone washing, and it
Yeah,
literally
yeah.
is stones.
I used to
There's
do stone
thousands
washing
of.
back in the 80s, you know. That was sort of
Yeah, exactly.
my first dive into textiles really. I was like 15 years old and I was in the 80s and it's the punk new wave era was out there. There was no stretch jeans. You used to have to lie on the bed with your coat hanger and try and yank up your zipper because your jeans are so tight. But I did stone acid washing with my jeans. I did that on and I was one of felt like a forerunner.
Yeah, it's, and that's part of the reason why it's so popular right now is everyone wants old school denim. Like that's what's so popular and that's what continues to be popular is how do we make it look like it used to be? And the quality has continued to get worse, but people still want it to look like it, old school denim.
Right.
But stone washing is horrible for the water tables because
Yeah,
those stones
I had
break
no
down
idea
into
when I
little
was 15.
particles.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's different, right, on an industrial scale versus, a home scale. And you can buy stone washing kits at home and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But when you're washing 10 million pairs of denim a month, it adds up fast. And so just the water consumption plus the chemicals, plus the spraying of chemicals, plus bleach to get things to look lighter blues, all of those different steps can create a lot of environmental damage. And so
Yeah.
the washing step is really important. It's really important to know your laundry. It's really important to know who is doing it, how they're doing it, using the most modern machines, because now the most modern machines have gotten the washing down to just minimal water. So the wastage is down, about 90% from where it was even 10 years ago. And so for us, that's part of the reason I'm here as well, is I'm going to the laundry every day. I'm going to all these different places, poking around, and now I don't work for a big company, so they have to let me do
And
it.
so I'm curious though, when you go to these companies, how receptive are they to the ideas of this reduction and of this accountability for environmental harm? What kind of feedback are you getting?
To be honest, in this case, it's where capitalism works really, really well, because it
Yeah.
actually saves them lots of money.
Sure.
So they love it because, for example, what's really in right now is laser washing, where
Okay.
they've actually created machines that give the same wash effect with laser. So it doesn't require any water, and the energy usage is actually quite low. And all the
Oh.
brands now want that because they can say it's a thing, right? And so the innovations in these different steps in manufacturing are actually being very well received because they're easier, they're faster, and they actually end up saving money. So they're a big fan of sustainable kind of fashion and the movement. Some of them aren't as receptive about replacing their older machines,
Right.
but the good ones are, and that's what you have to look for.
And so, if it's cheaper for them in the end and their margins will improve, why are these big companies not moving towards sustainable fashions?
Largely because it's an industry built on volume and margins that are based on pennies. And so
Right.
it is kind of challenging when, for example, a denim factory in a place like India, when they take an order from a brand like Zara for 1 million units, they'll maybe be making 50 cents a jean profit.
Right.
And so for them, they don't have any room to change what they're doing. And if it's working, they don't want
Right.
to. They have all these people and it's spitting it out, and their margins are so slim. They don't want to hear from someone like me going, well, if you replace this entire line of machines that work and are
Right.
functional with new $1 million machines, it would work better. And over time, it would save you money. It's a very kind of short-term thought process in
Right.
manufacturing. And unless something's broken, you don't replace it.
Right.
And so that's really kind of where you're seeing it now, when, there's brands like ours, which is a slow fashion brand, and we have the margins to play. And you have facilities that serve, companies like ours, and we pay a lot more. I pay about 6 or 7 times more in basically manufacturing cost than a fast fashion brand.
Right.
They're happy to play around, and they serve that market, so they can afford to, increase machines and things. So the problem really comes in consumer demand, and they just
Right.
the need to pump more and more and more and more things out. They don't have time to stop, and they don't have the margins to stop.
So how are you trying, I would like your brands and other brands like yours to become what we think of as normal. So how are you guys going to do, how can we do that? How can we get people thinking this is normal? My son, I had an interesting conversation with my son. He's 22. And I really like talking to the younger generations to see how they're thinking about all these things. And he said, it makes no sense to me that the really bad things in our lives, like fast fashion or foods that are not good for us, are cheap. Why are they not taxed for being bad? What, and really, why? Then people wouldn't bother making the things that are bad for us because it costs them too much money to do that. So how are,
Agreed.
anyway, that's just sort of a side thing, but how are you hoping to shift? Are you seeing a shift in the response from the general public? Are people moving towards this? Are you seeing that increase? Can we get this to be normal?
We can. It is just going to take some very intricate financial engineering. And what I mean
Right.
by that is going back to what we were talking about before, where when things are more expensive to manufacture, naturally brands want to make them more expensive. And it's going to
Right.
take a lot of people who say, I'm okay making less margin, or I'm okay not charging X because I can make money elsewhere. And in our case, for example, it's media. We don't pay for marketing. I've never run a single ad in my life because I do everything through TikTok and we have our community of people and it grows organically. And because of that, I can sell my jeans at $99 and they're going to last you 10 years, or more versus the 3 month pair that you would buy for $65 from a fast fashion company. At the same time, if your entire company has always been built on these razor thin margins, it's very hard to turn it around. We are seeing consumer, sentiment changing, and there is kind of a new paradigm, especially with younger people, in my generation now, who are like, yeah, I don't want to buy things that are temporary. And that's really the problem, is that fashion wasn't temporary up until about 25, 30 years ago. You would buy something to own it. And now just imagine the concept of like, oh yeah, I'm gonna buy these Zara jeans to pass them down to my future generations. No one says that or
Nobody
thinks
says
that.
that.
God, no. And you see it even, for example, I think that we call it the t-shirt index at Slow. When there are crappy slogan t-shirts in the storefront of everything, no one's buying that. Oh, I'm with this person, because it's going to be a timeless capsule piece in their closet. They're buying it because it's funny and it's temporary. And that's the big problem, is that fashion has shifted from this thing where it serves a function, you want it to last, and it's there for a reason, to a very easily replaceable and replicatable thing.
So
And
yeah, we just
so
need to guess change the narrative about what clothing means to us, right?
agreed. Or at least, if we the cat's out of the bag or Pandora's box is open, at least in staple pieces like denim, where they're the big things that they don't really change. And so you buy three or four really good pairs of jeans and you don't need to change them, and they can live in your closet, and good sweaters and good jackets and things like that. And if you want to still buy your fun t-shirts here and there, that things that spice up your closet, awesome, go for it. Or you want to buy a dress for a special occasion, awesome, but also buy it because you maybe want to wear it again at some point in the future. And I think once we do start to see consumer sentiment shift back towards quality, I think it will happen because there is going to be a breaking point in the near future, in the sense that prices of fast fashion clothing is increasing while quality continues to decrease. And there will come a point where consumers are just like, this is garbage. I don't
I'm
want this
paying
anymore.
that much for garbage.
Exactly.
When you said $65 for a Zara jeans, because I've never been in Zara, so I have no idea what costs there, but that seems like pricey.
Yeah, and I mean, they come down on sale. You can get them for $25, but when the new collection launches, they're at, yeah, $60, $70.
I mean, I would never shop there, so I will never know that.
Yeah.
But that's because I hate shopping in general, and I prefer to make my own clothes, or I upcycle, I buy used clothing and swap around with girlfriends and that kind of thing. So, or my sister. I tend to shop, and I've always done clothing that way. I've never really been a big shopper, but I'm also a product of the 80s, where I wasn't coming through the fast fashion. That wasn't where. I guess it was slightly after me when fast fashion really started kind of take hold.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned secondhand, and I think there's a kind of a I have a bit of a controversial stance on thrifting that I get into with people, and I'm curious to hear your take on it as well. But I think the biggest issue is, I love the concept of thrifting. I think it makes so much sense. If you don't want something anymore and someone else can put use to it, it makes a lot of sense. Bring it to a place, someone else will buy it, and someone else will, wear it again versus throwing it away. However, what I've noticed in the last 5 years, maybe even less, maybe 3 years, is that I feel like it's becoming a justification point for fast fashion, in the sense that you're seeing a lot of people that they go on Monday and buy something from, Shein or Zara or one of these other places. They wear it a few times and then they sell it to a thrift shop. And they're like, oh, well, it's not bad because I've given it away to a thrift store and someone else will wear it. But the reality is that it doesn't change the fact that the garment itself is garbage and it was designed to be worn five or six times. And you go into a thrift store now in like Montreal, where I live, which is a big thrift culture. 80% of the store is no longer vintage things that have been worn, not from the 90s. They're collections that I know are from 2 months ago. And it's like, almost, it's this justification thing for people to be like, I buy fast fashion, but I thrift it. And
Right.
we're seeing this, and I've gotten into this before, people being like, it's not good for the environment if you're using it as an excuse to buy more fast
Oh
fashion.
yeah, no, I agree 100% with that. That's the first time I've heard about people doing that, but it doesn't surprise me at the same time. I guess, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I could see people doing that. But the people that I know that thrift and myself, when I'm thrifting, like when I go shopping, I shop for clothing maybe 3 or 4 times a year. Like I'm not a shopper at all. And I think that's maybe 3 or 4 times a year. When I go thrifting, I'm usually looking for fabric for quilting. So I'm going out looking for linens and sheets and bigger yardage pieces of fabric, and trying to figure out ways to use these materials. Because some interesting facts about thrifting and about our great endeavors to recycle and repurpose, really only about 30% of what we take to those reuse center actually ends up on the floor. About 70% of it ends up in textile recycling centers where they're sorting and sending shipping bales of fabrics, of materials, of clothing off to South Africa, Malaysia, sending them out. They go and there they'll go into the markets. And but if they don't sell there, I mean, I can't imagine how many Malaysian markets there are and how much, like, we just have too much clothing. We have too much textile waste on this planet, and they end up in landfill sites. Down in South America, there's huge landfill sites that's just solid textiles. And really, like, we think we're doing this great thing by putting stuff into these reuse centers, but only 30% of it ends up out on the floor.
Exactly. That's
Crazy.
exactly what I'm getting at. We're on the same page here. Yeah, because it doesn't matter if, you feel good about it because you never have to see it again. But if it ends up in the clothing mountain in Chile, it's still a problem whether you skipped that step and bought it at that
Well,
fast
it's out of
fashion shop.
sight, though, right? So we don't have to think about it again.
And that's where I've challenged people recently. It's like, look, I totally get it. If you want to go to a thrift shop and you're looking for like a piece, something. I buy lots of vintage denim because I'm always looking for inspiration. And I have like 300 pairs of jeans because that's what I do for a living and I need to know, right? And
Can't imagine
I
your
don't wear them
closet.
all. A lot of them aren't even in my size. It's just like, wow, Levi's did that in the 80s. Wow, I need to see that. Like, and I bring it to factories here and I'm like, can you do this? And they're like, whoa, who did that? Like, I have no idea. But yeah, anyway, that's my slightly controversial take on
No,
thrifting. I
I think
think
it's totally
it's
reasonable to have those kinds of conversations and make people think about what it is they're doing and how they're doing. Our purchasing needs to, we need to think about that differently. And I like the idea that you have about staple pieces and buying good quality versus the quick stuff. Like, we can do quick stuff occasionally. And I feel that same way about quilting. We can buy the materials from our latest designer, even if they're not sustainable in some way, because they're beautiful fabrics and we're going to make beautiful quilts out of them, which will become heirlooms and then be taken out of the waste stream that way, which would be awesome. But we also can start thinking about how we can upcycle or thrift or use certified products rather than just going to always going to the Fabricland or the Joann to go and buy the cheap fabric. There's lots of other options out there other than the cheap fabric.
Agreed. Agreed.
Thank you so much for this conversation. I think that I would like to talk to you about it. There's a few other things I wanted to talk to you about, but I think we got most of the conversation. And I want to wrap up, but can you tell people where to find you and how they can actually get in touch with you and maybe order a pair of jeans? I know I'm going to be going to order a pair of jeans.
The easiest way would be to come to our website at slowjeans.co. So slowjeans.co. You find all my information there. My personal email address is there. All my social media handles are there. Feel free to reach out anytime. I answer every email that people send with any questions. So
That's
we have a great
awesome.
community, and come and join us if you're interested in some slow fashion.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for the conversation today. And we'll put all of that into the show notes as well so people can easily access. And I'll check in with you again next year and see what you're up to.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks again for the opportunity. It was great.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I thought it was really interesting. What I find really interesting about that is the idea that a business is looking at their profitability not from the perspective of volume. They're looking at it from a very different lens, and their profitability of quality and their core values are really strong in how they feel about material production and the impact on the people who are doing the production as well. And at the end of the day, the users, the people who are purchasing their clothing, are getting quality clothing that they're really proud of. And they're going to tell more people about those quality pieces of clothing. So it's not, they're looking for quality customers without the super high price tag and quality materials, and they do a lot of research around all of that to make sure that their materials are safe and healthy, and their production processes are also safe and healthy for the planet and the people working around them. I think if we can start supporting more businesses like this, we need to see more businesses like this, and that will improve our overall well-being on this planet. And that's what this is all about. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode. Send me an email, reach out to me on social media. I'd love to hear and have some conversations around this. And I will talk to you again next time. Thank you so much for joining me and listening to Threads of Sustainability. I really appreciate all the support that I've received over the last year. If you're interested in supporting the podcast, you can do that in a couple of different ways. You can go over to my website and you can buy me a cuppa, and that helps keep the lights on here. You can also like, follow, and share the podcast with people that you know that might be interested. If you're interested in joining a community where we talk about all the different kinds of things around sustainability and share projects and share our journeys with each other, you can join the Green Stitchers Hive. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. You can send me an email. I'd love to hear from you and hear what you think about the podcast. Have a great day.